comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. It's all right. Here comes the sun.
Hey everybody, welcome to Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. This is your host, Eric Mann. I'm in studio with Jenny Martinez, our producer. And today's show is going to be sort of the last of this sort of module on communism. We have done, it started out with a film review of the film Neruda. And that led us to a film review of the film Il Postino, both about Pablo Neruda. That was 3 weeks ago. Then 2 weeks ago, we did a show called I Was a Communist in the Trade Union Movement by Eric Mann. Hey, that's the same name as I got because it was the same person. Then the week after that, we had a show with John Bachtel, who's the chair of the Communist Party USA. And each time, as we always do on Voices, we went to the phones, and our listeners are pretty terrific. We're going to go to the phones again today, and I'm trying to do some sort of tying up of loose ends. So I guess it was a four-show segment on the importance of communism. And the reason, so I have about a bunch of books in front of me. You know I like books. I read a lot, and including a book signing that we're going to have tomorrow night at Strategy and Soul, 3546 Martin Luther King Boulevard, which is King and Crenshaw at 6 p.m. We're going to have a book signing with the author for a new book called City of Inmates, Conquest, Rebellion, and the Rise of Human Caging in Los Angeles, 1771-1965 by Kelly Lytle Hernandez. So she's going to be with us tomorrow night at 6, and at about 3:20, 3:30, we're going to have Manuel Criollo, the director of organizing with the Strategy Center, to tell us a little bit more about the book signing. But if you're free tomorrow night and you want to meet an important author and get an important book, join us at the corner of King and Crenshaw, 3546 Martin Luther King, Wednesday, May 4th at 6 p.m. Okay, I'll be back on that soon. Now, I'm also going to talk to you about two other cool books in a minute that are about communism. Well, I'll tell you the names now. One is Tariq Ali's new book, and I would like to get him on Voices soon. It's called The Dilemmas of Lenin, Terrorism, War, Empire, Love, and Revolution. I've started it. It's really terrific. Another one called New Studies in the Politics and Culture of U.S. Communism, edited by Michael Brown and others from Monthly Review Press. That is a 1993 book, but I read it a lot. I have certain books that I just like and I keep coming back to. So where are we going with all this? Well, I think what I'm realizing is that today we're in a real crisis. I'm going to put out the view that there is no movement. There are people doing things, but if you're looking for a coherent group of people with a broad agreement on political program, like, for instance, when I was in the movement, in the civil rights anti-war movement, we agreed that black liberation was the central so-called internal domestic issue and that the fight for a civil rights bill, a voting rights bill. But all the struggles coming out of the black struggle were what everybody in the United States believed was the central driving issue, not the only issue, but the central driving issue inside the heart of U.S. imperialism, and that the war in Vietnam was the central external struggle against U.S. imperialism, and that the strategic fulcrum of anti-racist, anti-imperialism was the fight against for national liberation for the Vietnamese and the fight for national liberation for the blacks. Many issues came out of that. There was the women's liberation movement, the Chicano liberation movement. I can go on. But none of us felt that that denied the centrality, the driving strategic force of the black and Vietnamese struggles internationally. If you ask me today to explain what our movement has in common, I think if you wrote down what you think you're fighting for and 25 other people wrote down what they're fighting for, you'd have, sadly, a very different set of perceptions of what even we think we're fighting for. The second thing is we have profound differences on big tactical questions, but those tactical questions could get resolved if we agreed on even what the program was, what the common program was of what we're fighting for. So the reason that I'm very concerned, because there's been repression, there's been sectarianism, there's been, once again, state repression. But in my view, the central ideological failing of today's movement is its acceptance, implicit or explicit, of anti-communism and many of its premises that, as a result, has prevented any coherent movement from developing, because anti-communism is a recipe for disaster. So I actually did some writing, of course, in preparation for the show on 11 reasons communists play such an important role. And I wrote them down. I'm going to elaborate them a little, and then I'm going to make it into an article. But this will give you some frame of, because when I tell you these things, I think you'll admit that the present movement does not agree on it and doesn't do it. All right, so the first is that communists have a strategy, in this case, to overthrow capitalism and create socialism. They want a different system. And the question is, what do you want? If you say you're fighting for social justice, if you say you're fighting for any specific thing, if you don't think you're trying to overthrow capitalism in its imperialist form, which I'll get to, then I ask you, do you really have a strategy? Because the communists, whatever else you say about them, they've always had a strategy. The second is internationalism, because when you listen to Bernie talk about student loans and single-payer health care, what does that in the world have to do with the world? Communists say, first, workers of the world unite, which was very frankly a Eurocentric view. But under Lenin and the Third World, it became workers and oppressed peoples of the world unite. So the idea always that whether it was workers of the world unite or workers and oppressed people to the world unite, the communists were the first ones who had an international strategy. They were the first ones who went to people in Germany and said, the issue is not Germany. The issue is capitalism as a world system. We may fight inside of Germany. We may fight inside of France, which is why the communists were able to have parties in Vietnam, parties in China, parties in Guinea-Bissau, parties in Guinea, parties in Venezuela, all of whom were fighting against their own bourgeoisie. But all of them were fighting in an international struggle, and they had something called the Comintern, which was a terrible threat to imperialism, because imagine if we were all in one international organization fighting against imperialism. So the first is that the communists have a strategy. The second is their strategy is an internationalism, and increasingly an international struggle against imperialism. And I ask you, do you agree with one and do you agree with two? And if not, what's your strategy? Number three, here's a big one, the communists are winners. The communists are the only political force that has made a successful revolution against capitalism and imperialism. The Russian Revolution, the Great Russian Revolution, preceded, by the way, by the Haitian Revolution, which was not communist but was an amazing anti-imperialist revolution. Then the Russian Revolution led to the creation of the Soviet Union. Then the communists had the People's Republic of China, the successful revolution in Cuba. In South Africa, the battle against apartheid was a broad united front, but it was led by the South African Communist Party. The communist revolution in East Germany and certainly the very, very important communist revolution in Vietnam. So what in the world have the social democrats, anarchists, greens, terrorists, and Trotskyists accomplished? Not one of them, not one of those philosophies has led remotely to a revolution. So you can say whatever you want about what's wrong with communism, and at some point I will tell you a lot of things that I think are, quote, wrong with communism. But if you say it's the only strategy that's won, you have to ask yourself, well, I like another strategy because what? It loses? Fourth, that the communists have fought hardest for blacks, Latinos, indigenous people, Asian Pacific Islanders, and again, third world people, including that the communists have been the socialist organizations, have been the only ones to recruit significant number of blacks, Latinos, indigenous people, Asian Pacific Islanders, and third world people. Note when Bernie keeps saying he's for socialism, how come it's such a white socialism? How come Bernie comes out of Vermont, which doesn't even have the right to be a state? It's an all-white settler state. Bernie talks about the American people, the American people, the American people. He doesn't talk about black people because he's white. But he's not just white. He's white in his consciousness. I told the story before that Cornel West tells the story that when people were so happy about the fall of communism, he said, well, except for the fact that the communists are the only socialist organization that recruited black people, and social democracy has not. And for a lot of the white people who are social democracy people, really like Bernie or the Socialist Party or Elizabeth Warren, know how white they are and how they, oh, yeah, yeah, we should talk about race, but they never do. Are you one of those people? Same with Occupy. Yes, there were some people of color in Occupy, but Occupy was a white movement. Communists fought for women's liberation and theorized the oppression of women in the capitalist nuclear family and the exploitation of women's labor in the family. Now, this is a more complicated legacy. Obviously, the a critical theoretical contribution was Engels. The family private property in the state, which tried to tie the subjugation of women to capitalist economic relationships and the family being a direct adjunct of capitalism. In the very important book, New Studies in the Politics and Culture of U.S. Communism, there's a terrific essay by Roz Baxendall, who I knew during the 60s, I think she started the Red Stockings movement, I'm not sure, said the question seldom asked, women and the CPUSA. Now, the CPUSA, the Communist Party USA, was not great on women's liberation. But the second generation communists that I was a part of, the new communist movement, I think was very strong on women's liberation, and especially that it came more out of black, Latino, and Asian women. And that's a whole nother conversation. The Chinese have done some very important theoretical work on women's liberation. I'm not saying there were not significant contradictions and problems, but again, look at the socialists, the anarchists, the Greens. Do they have any theoretical discussion of women and women's liberation politics? I'll still stand by communists fought for women's liberation and theorized the oppression of women in the capitalist nuclear family. Six, communists built the trade unions in the United States and the anti-communist social democrats and Democrats destroyed them. If you look at the history of the building of the labor movement in the United States, it was not just built by communists. Much of the labor movement began. Remember, this was the white labor movement with the international workers of the world and others. But during the height of the industrial union fight in the 30s, the Communist Party was the driving force. And it brought adversarial labor relations to the unions. It brought organization, which I'll get to. After the war, the United States government engaged in a hellacious repression of the trade unions. It passed the Taft-Hartley Act in 1947 that said you could not be an officer of a union if you were a communist. It drove communists out either underground or out of the leadership. And I don't know if you know it, but many of the unions were simply constructed by capitalism to get rid of the communists. That is to say, first the communists built the trade unions, and then after the war, anti-communist leadership was installed by the Democratic Party, by the anti-communist state, even by capitalism itself. And the unions, of course, began to decline dramatically because they were agents of capitalism and they were agents of the employer. So I say communists built the trade unions and the anti-communist social democrats and Democratic Party destroyed the labor movement. There virtually is no labor movement today. There are virtually no unions, very low percentage of unionized workers. Seven, the communists bring discipline, structure, hierarchy, lines of command. I'd argue to you, because I was in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I'm sorry, I worked with it. I was not in it. I was with the Congress of Racial Equality. I worked closely with SNCC and the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. Those organizations were not communist, but contrary to the fact that being talked about how democratic they were, which in many ways they were, they also had discipline, structure, hierarchy, and lines of command. If you don't think that SNCC would tell people, I need you to go to this city and work in this city. The voice you're hearing is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines on KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming live on the web at kpfk.org. Yes, I'd love emails at Eric at Voices from the Frontline or tweets at Eric Mann Speaks. So this is all about all the things I'm saying the communists brought, I'm saying today's movement doesn't have, which is why it's anti-communist, whether it knows it or not. For instance, communists bring discipline, structure, hierarchy, lines of command. Look, when I worked for CORE, I was a field secretary. My boss was Joyce Ware, a woman. Her boss was Lou Smith. He was the regional director. His boss was James Farmer, the president. Nobody questioned that. Why would you question that? James Farmer was the leader of CORE. Lou Smith was the regional director. Joyce was the lead field secretary, and I was a lower field secretary. I was honored to be in the organization. I followed orders, meaning we had a conversation. I was allowed to have an opinion. But at the end, Joyce Ware said, yeah, that's interesting, Eric, but no, this is what we're going to do. And I would say, thanks, Joyce, and I would go do what we agreed on doing. Any organization effectively has to have that. So if your organization has no discipline, no structure, no hierarchy, no lines of command, no wonder you're losing. Next, communists demand sacrifice, life and death sacrifice, prison sacrifice, torture, just hard work. When Leanne and I were in a communist organization, we gave $500 a month cash to the organization. I fundraise now for my own organization where the money is tax deductible. I don't know anybody, or virtually the whole history, very few people have given $500 a month out of their own, especially not auto workers. We were auto workers. We were not wealthy people. But we made very good money, and we were happy to give $500 a month. No, if you give money to a communist organization, it's not tax deductible. But anyway, sacrifice, structure, people like sacrifice. All good organizations require sacrifice, and the communists attracted the best and the more disciplined. 9. Communists bring theory to practice. The revolution is a university for a lifetime. Great books, films, the Communist Manifesto, imperialism, the highest state of capitalism, what is to be done by Lenin, an analysis of classes in Chinese society and the anti-Japanese United Front, on practice, on contradiction, also by Mao. The family, private property and the state by Engels. There's all some great books that have a theory. What theory do you have? Do you make it up from the seat of your pants? Do you wake up in the morning and think, I think? Oh, yeah, you all think. But theory is trying to take all the actions and all the thoughts that people have had throughout the world and systematize them in some formal presentation of an idea. That idea, we think, has some truth because it's been proven in practice, or maybe you think it hasn't been proven in practice. You can debate the idea. But without the theory and without a planned and conscious character, I don't know how you do anything. Certainly, I'll tell you, there's great theory at Facebook. There's great theory at Google. There's great theory at Tesla. But I don't see any theory in today's movement, which is why Facebook and Google and Tesla are not only winning, they're even winning the ideological argument among the people in the non-movement because they spend more time on Facebook than they do reading Mao, to say the least. 10, communists have an ideological, moral approach to life. I was looking at Mao's Avoid Stereotype Party writing and also an analysis of his 3 main rules of discipline and 8 points for attention. So thanks, Channy. He got, why don't you read them actually, because you found them. And I just want you to listen to Mao's lessons to the communists in China.
So these are instructions of the general headquarters of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. Our army's 3 main rules and disciplines and 8 points of attention have been practiced for many years, but their contents vary slightly in army units in different areas. They have been unified and are hereby reissued. It is expected that you will take this version as the standard one for thorough education, strict enforcement. As to other matters needing attention, the high command of the armed forces in different areas may lay down additional points in accordance with specific conditions and orders their enforcement. Very straightforward and very disciplined, just to begin with. So, the 3 main rules of discipline are as follow. Obey orders in all your actions. Straight to the point. Don't take a single needle or piece of thread from the masses. Turn in everything captured. The eight points of attention are as follows. Speak politely. Pay fairly for what you buy. Return everything you borrow. Pay for anything you damage. Don't hit or swear at people. Don't damage crops. Don't take liberties with women. Don't ill-treat captives.
Thanks. And very seriously, there have been some terrific articles written comparing these rules, which, by the way, the communists did carry out almost, which is why they won again, to what the U.S. Army does against the people, steals from them, do not take a single needle or piece of thread from the masses, turn in everything captured, speak politely, you know, you get it. So my point number 10 is that the communists have an ideological and moral approach to life. These are moral standards. And it begins with obey orders, because you can't get everybody to, in their heart, act this way. But you can get everybody to obey the orders or pay the consequences. So if you know the party really says, don't steal a thread, don't mistreat women, speak politely. If you don't, there will be consequences inside the communist organization, where there's no consequences inside a capitalist army, to say the least. Finally, I wrote, communism is a religion. and people need religion. The so-called messianic eschatology, that is to say, communism believes that there is someday a messiah. The messiah is the masses. Eschatology means, Jacques Derrida, that's who it was. He was criticizing communism for having what's called messianic eschatology, meaning first there's feudalism, and then there's capitalism, and then there's socialism, and then there's communism, and we're all going to live happily ever after. Well, yeah, but that's what a religion does. I mean, you know, Catholicism said if you do this, you're all going to go to heaven. And the communists said if you do this, you're going to all get to communism. I think there's a better chance of getting to communism than heaven. So I wrote, if religion is the opiate of the masses, communism is religion without the opiates. So contrary to what the communists said, in fact, communism did become a religion. That's one of its problems, but it's also one of the wonderful things. You joined the Communist Party, you had a worldview, you had something you could believe in. You could do something that made you think your life mattered. And that's 11 reasons why a communist plays such an important role. 11 things that I do not think the movement has today and needs. Okay. So when we go to the phones, 818-985-5735, and our phones are a little messed up. But we're still going to do it if you call. But we have no idea if you called because the computer doesn't work. So we got to trust you. And if not, luckily, I have music, gee, and I'm going to sing. So we'll be fine. But the next guest, you're on Eric Mann, and that was the other voice of Channing Martinez. You're on Voices from the Frontlines. Our next guest or guest is going to be Manuel Criollo, the director of organizing of the Labor Community Strategy Center and the host of tomorrow night's book signing with Kelly Little Hernandez or Lytle Hernandez. So tell me how to pronounce it. Manuel, are you with us?
Hey, Eric. How you doing?
Good. Manuel, I know we're trying to build Strategy Soul Bookstore into a big thing, and this is our first book signing. Why don't you tell us a little about the bookstore and your vision for it, then tell us a little about the book, and then give people the information about how they can join us tomorrow night.
Yeah, you know, Strategy and Soul Books is, you know, a vision that many of us at Strategy Center have dreamed about and are moving toward, and, you know, that's been a lot of your work and a lot of work of that, you know, many of the folks here at Strategy Center have been attempting to do, which is to have, you know, a movement, you know, center, literacy center, a book center, a center of thought and exchange, in many ways, just what you just raised, which is, you know, what are the, you know, 75 important revolutionary books that every revolutionary should talk about and read and debate. And in many ways, Strategy and Soul, which is on 3542 West Martin Luther King Boulevard, the heart of, you know, Crenshaw in South Central Los Angeles, is trying to do. And, you know, in many ways, we want to carry some of the many of the books that you laid out, you know, the Communist Manifesto, SNCC, you know, Black Reconstruction, you know, Black Bolshevik, a whole stream of critical, important books that we all need to read in fact to both learn from the past and hopefully project toward the future. And so, you know, as you know, Strategy and Soul has been open since October of last year, and now this is sort of our first kind of book signing event at Strategy and Soul Books. And you know, we're hosting Kelly Lytle Hernandez, who's a professor at UCLA, who's written this new book called City of Inmates, Conquest, Rebellion, and the Rise of Human Caging in Los Angeles from 1771 and 1965. So, you know, and it's going to be tomorrow at 6 p.m. at Strategy and Soul. It's 3542 West Martin Luther King Boulevard. You know, and it means a lot to us that, you know, both that this is coming into fruition and that this is one of the first books that we have for to sort of welcome folks about debating some of these critical questions that folks raise.
So the blurb on the book, beautifully produced by the University of North Carolina Press, which does some of the very best work on Black and Third World Studies, says, Kelly Lytle Hernandez, City of Inmates, is a remarkable book. No historian has ever told California's history with the breadth and depth of its enduring significance quite like this. Since the Spanish colonial period, every kind of American, from Native Americans to Mexican and Chinese American, to landless whites and African Americans, has passed through California's jailhouse doors with profound implications for the shape of our nation today. No telling or teaching of the past is complete without reckoning with the supremely urgent stories of our carceral history by Khalil Gibran Muhammad, author of The Condemnation of Blackness. I'm going to tell a story that's related to this because we have a campaign right now trying to, we have already a complaint in front of the Department of Transportation charging the MTA with anti-Black police brutality on the trains at a grotesque level. And to show you how crazy things are and related to the, related to the program that Manuel is going to chair tomorrow, we were at the MTA the other day, and for a minute, you know, it's funny how you can never stop talking about police brutality and Black people, even when you don't, because we were at the MTA, and LA CAN, Los Angeles Community Action Network, got up, and they're in an ongoing campaign against Mayor Garcetti, charging him with racism at the police commission, racism in the city, racism and gentrification, racism on the trains, which we agree with completely. So his brother gets up from LA CAN at the Los Angeles MTA, which we've been discussing. And we were there to discuss that day 5,000 zero-emission buses. Well, the brother gets up to disrupt the meeting. That was his point. He didn't want to go in public comment and speak in his little one-minute slavery, which we all have to go through. He did not get three words out of his mouth when five police jumped all over him and had their hands on him and started to escort them out. So I jumped up and said, get your hands off him. And then the strategy center people jumped up and said, get your hands off him. To our credit, in our support of our brothers at LA CAN, the cops did for a moment take their hands off him. And then they do escort him off, and as he's, you know, as always, the Black man has to say, I'm going, but my point is, as the police, five police around an unarmed man, an unarmed Black man. So I then went to the mic and said to Mayor Garcetti, you know, we have a case against you for police brutality against Black people. And I just saw police brutality against Black people that you sponsored or at least you sanctioned because this is a campaign against you. And you allowed five police to put their hands on this man. So I then went up to Stephanie Wiggins, who is the deputy chief executive officer, a decent person, Black woman. I said, Stephanie, this is exactly the police brutality that we're bringing you to court about. Were you not upset and sickened about that? She indicated she thought there was something wrong, and she brought him another meeting with Alex Wiggins. I don't think any will see any. Anyway, chief system security and law enforcement officer. So Alex Wiggins, who's also Black, said to me, I think I did nothing wrong. In fact, we could have done a lot more. We could have put a chokehold on him. We could have done this. He was telling me all the other things he could have done to indicate why he was the good cop. So we're going to talk about this tomorrow night. The point is that Kelly's important book, City of Inmates, Conquest, Rebellion, the Rise of Human Caging, up to 1965, we're fighting it in 2017, and that's one reason we want you to come out tomorrow night, because there's going to be a relationship between the human caging history and the human caging history that's unfortunately being made today. And Manuel, as since you are both the lead organizer of this event and you are going to be the sort of host and framer of it, what are some of the things that you want people to think about and get them to come out tomorrow night?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've met Kelly maybe about a couple years ago, and I had known that she had written a really important book also about the history of INS and La Migra. It's a really important book called La Migra. And, you know, obviously one of the things that we have in, sort of in common is this sort of discussion of how do we understand the United States as a settler colonial project. And, you know, I think that in many ways what many people in the movement, and I think that's what she's basing it on, is they're saying that through the long history of struggle from by indigenous people, by Mexican people, by black people, by Chinese people, against this system of incarceration, this system of policing, and what she sort of calls the system of like disappearance of people to sort of, you know, justify and to live basically under the acceptance of a white settler society. So in many ways, as you're saying, Eric, you know, for us, this is modern day genocide that's happening. It's not just, you know, a theoretical discussion. It's not just something that's happening historically. It's something that's happening today. And in many ways, this campaign that Strategy Center has initiated around ending the stop and frisk and what we call, you know, Stop MTA's Genocide Against the Black Nation is, you know, a modern day story that's playing out, not just about policing and, you know, people being asked about their fares, but it's the whole, you know, set of policies and laws and sort of, you know, social, political, economic project that's pushing black people away from the city. And MTA is a sort of major player in that. And so, obviously, I'm hoping that people not only come for a book, which I think, obviously, we should all read and engage. It's, you know, it's exciting to sort of see a book that, you know, basically is able to thread the history of all these oppressed people throughout the history of L.A., but more importantly, that there's, a modern-day system and that is playing out. And that I know, obviously, from my conversation with Kelly, is that she also is trying to uplift all those stories about the modern-day struggles against this system.
Well, the thing is, so listeners, you know how we go 818-985-5735, which we will. In fact, if you're going to come to the event, that would be a cool thing to call in to about 818-985-5735. Send an email to Manuel at thestrategycenter.org. Is that right?
That's right.
So Manuel at thestrategycenter.org and say, I heard you on Voices from the Frontlines. I do want to come. You can call us. Are you at the office at 213? Is there somebody to pick up a phone?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You can call us at 213-387-2800 and say you want to come. You can call KPFK 818-985-5735. Because if you're mainly a person who reads a lot, come and buy the book and learn about the organizing. If you're a person who mainly organizes, come and buy the book and learn about theory and history. That's what Strategy and Soul Books and Strategy and Soul Movement Center is trying to do, is create a theory and practice and get people together in a very exciting and, by the way, very beautifully designed bookstore. So it's 3542 Martin Luther King, 90008. There's King and Crenshaw. You go a little bit in, past the Louisiana Chicken, across from the Krispy Kreme.
You pass the old M&M's.
Across the old M&M's, Soul Food. And it's now a beauty supply store, all pink. And right next to it, we have the other half of the block called Strategy and Soul, with a big, big neon sign. You'll have no trouble finding it. There will be a reception afterwards with the author and a signing of the books. We'd love you to join us, okay? So we're going to go to the phones, if that's okay, Channing, and we're going to see if we can do it. Manuel, maybe you can stay on with us. And is that all right?
Sure.
In case there's some calls. So you can call us now, but here's the problem. I can't see Jack, as they say, or Jill, or whoever's calling. 818-985-5735. Are those real calls? What? Say what? You can say it on.
Oh, it's going to blink when there is a call.
All right. It's going to blink if there's a call. Cool. So 818-985-5735. Let's start with talking about communism. Talk about my concept of 11 reasons communists play such an important role. If you'd like to talk about coming to the book signing of City of Inmates tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at Strategy and Soul, 3542 Martin Luther King. If you want to talk to Manuel Kiyoyo, ask him any questions. We'd love to hear from you. 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735. I'm going to read a little bit from Kelly's book, if that's okay, Manuel, while we're waiting for calls. So this is Eric Mann. And again, I'm reading it from the book City of Inmates. So she starts out with a very good line: mass incarceration is mass elimination. That's the punchline of this book. I had trouble arriving at such an unsettling idea, but the collection of 2 centuries of evidence documenting the long rise of incarceration in Los Angeles left me no other interpretation. Incarceration operates as a means of purging, removing, caging, containing, erasing, disappearing, and eliminating target populations from land, life, and society in the United States. That's Kelly's voice. I just want to say one thing about Eric's voice. You know, we're doing a lot of work at the Strategy Center. We say stop MTA and U.S. genocide against the black nation. There were 700,000 black people in L.A. in 1970. There's only 350,000 now. So we go back to her statement. Incarceration operates as a means of purging, removing, caging, containing, erasing, disappearing, and eliminating targeted populations from land, life, and society in the United States. This theme was also generated by Cynthia Hamilton in her very important pamphlet, Apartheid, the American City, Case of the Black Community in Los Angeles, that the Strategy Center still publishes to this day. Why Los Angeles? We're back to Kelly Lytle Hernandez. Los Angeles is a hub of incarceration, imprisoning more people than any other city in the United States, which incarcerates more people than any other nation on earth. Each night, nearly 17,000 men, women, and youth are locked somewhere in Los Angeles County's $1 billion system of jails, detention centers, and one penal farm. You can call us at 818-985-5735 if you want to talk about the positive role of communism. If you want to talk about coming to the book signing tomorrow night at 3542 Martin Luther King, Strategy and Soul, you can send an email to manuel@thestrategycenter.org. You can tweet me just for the heck of it at Eric Mann Speaks. You can do whatever you want, but just please get in touch with it. How's that? You got anybody on? Okay, not yet. 818-985-5735. There are also 88 other municipal jails, more than 20 juvenile detention halls and camps, and 2 federal facilities sited within the county. And just over the mountains lying the northeast edge of Los Angeles County, GEO Group, a private prison company, operates a large immigrant detention center that contracts with the federal government to hold the spillover of deportees from the city. Therefore, in both size and scope, the project of human caging in Los Angeles is massive. Some say no city in the world incarcerates more people than Los Angeles. If so, Los Angeles, the city of angels, is in fact the city of inmates, the carceral capital of the world. 818-985-5735. We will take that call and see who that person is. You're with
Hello?
Eric. Yeah, how you doing? This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Front Lines.
Hi, Eric. I've met you a few times. My name's Bobby. I wanted to ask you just a quick question, and you go off with it, whatever you think. I wanted to know what role you think Eric Garcetti in City Hall plays in the eviction, expulsion, banishment, and mass incarceration regime of this city.
Well, Bobby, you couldn't have asked, you know, a nicer leading question since you know what we think. But that's, thank you. Say the words again.
I just want some clarification.
No, I'm serious. But say those, each of those words separately. Those were really good words. I want to make sure we address them.
Well, the way I see it is, first there's eviction.
Right.
And then there's expulsion.
Right.
And then there's banishment.
Right.
And part of the banishment is City Hall's mass incarceration, where they go into a neighborhood. The developers say, we want this property for our luxury buildings. Go and do your job that we pay you for. So it was eviction, expulsion, banishment, and mass incarceration.
Thank you so much. Really, thank you
Great.
So much.
Take care.
All right, of course. This is Eric Mann. I'm going to throw that to Manuel Criollo, who's on the line with us, and he and I think very similarly, since we're back in the same organization with an intellectual discipline. How would you respond to his question and tie it directly to Eric Garcetti?
You know, obviously the mayor of Los Angeles controls, you know, I think three primary premises of how a city runs. One, who do you tax and what kind of, and what's the rules of engagement for business and the economic system? So he plays a big role in evictions, expulsions, and banishment and mass incarceration. Second, he, of course, he is basically commander-in-chief of the LAPD, while he has, you know, 15 other junior partners in the city council. He has a lot of power to push policies or stop policies if he chose to end, you know, the kind of criminalization, the evictions, the expulsion, the banishment of folks. And lastly, you know, in the most direct way, in the way that even this issue of banishment plays out, you know, one of the most, you know, sickening aspects of our struggle against MTA is that while in, you know, after MTA tickets you, and if you don't pay, you know, these sort of fines, you know, they could go up to about $75 to $100 for these fines that you get for, you know, a whole gamut of issues, but of course, fare evasion is a big one, is that they can literally banish you from public transportation. They have technically the right to do that. So, you know, I definitely think that those are very useful ideas. And, you know, going back to the book itself and, you know, again, the long history of indigenous and Chicano, you know, movements that have fought explicitly against the issue of land grabbing, the issue of, you know, ethnic cleansing and genocide at the hands to remove you from your land. And that ultimately, and as you said, Eric, that even in, you know, an important pamphlet like, you know, Apartheid in an American City by Cynthia Hamilton, the whole idea that basically land becomes more important than people. And ultimately that's what's played out for, you know, 300 to 350 years here in the L.A. Basin, and that's continued to this day.
And I just add one thing, and they'll go, what is the next, Channing? What is the next person's name? Rodney from San Bernardino. I just want to say one more thing. When I was at the MTA meeting, you know, you just got to watch it. You see Mark Ridley Thomas, and you see
I'd like to say on this whole conversation, if this country's turning totally communist. We got county government taking people's kids away constantly for not having
Let me try to respond to what he was trying to say. It's interesting. That's an example of he was saying that a lot of things he didn't like, he perceived to be communist. So he was talking about bad things. He was talking about the government taking people away. And he was saying that those are communist things, because I think what he means by that, I'm not speaking for him, is he was talking about the role of the state, 818-985-5735. That's a real problem. It's a problem in communist societies. It is a problem in communist societies. It's a problem in capitalist societies. But I would say the role of the state is worse in the capitalist society. And more importantly, this is the one we live in. You know, we're not having a hypothetical debate. I don't live in a communist society. I live in U.S. imperialism. And the state, so what he was trying to say is that the state evicts people. The state, the government comes in. He called it communism. Obviously, I think it's capitalism. But you understand that's what the issue was. 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. You're on KPFK with Eric Mann and Manuel Criollo. If you're interested in the issues of communism and its positive impacts on society, and as I said in the flyer, or as the brother said, what he thinks are the negative impacts, because he thinks the bad things that are happening to him are communist, call us at 818-985-5735. The point I was trying to make, Manuel, is that, you know, back to the Garcetti issue, I want to try to write about it, but I don't know how to say it. You go to the MTA meeting, and there's Jackie DuPont Walker, and there's Mayor Garcetti, and Mark Ridley Thomas, and Sheila Kuehl, and Hilda Solis, and they're all chatting it up and being very clever with each other. And Garcetti, you know, he just got reelected in an election that nobody even knew happened. He doesn't care. They just sit there, and they're just like little kings and queens on tiny little thrones that are elevated to make them look like they're bigger than us. And they really do not care. And I don't know what to do about that, but I do think there's a moral crisis in the U.S. ruling class. That's a form of degeneration. That's the worst I've seen in a very long time. I'm going to go to Marco and hope that he says something that we can allow him to continue on KPFK. Marco, what's on your mind?
Hi there. I just wanted to add that I think that while I agree with some of the things you were saying about some of the problems with implementing communism at like a state level, I think that one of the best...
Excuse me, you're making some noise. Are you just stay with your phone? Go ahead.
Oh, I think that one of the greatest impacts that communism has had is that sort of like at the lower levels of society is sort of pushing back against some of these ills of capitalism, and the people have been able to use communist ideologies to sort of push back against some of the problems of capitalism and sort of pull, at least in the United States, that society towards one that is more beneficial for people in general. So it's kind of like you see it with like the labor movement. You mentioned the creation of like unions and all that stuff, but you see it also in like wages and the treatment of women and things like that, and how like a lot of that comes from some of that ideology that communism tried to sort of spread, and it's sort of been used to pull the state towards that ideology, even though it hasn't completely shifted that way. Does that make sense?
I completely agree. I don't know if you know that's what I was saying. I was agreeing with you that communists have moved every single movement in a better direction. You know what I mean? They moved the labor movement in a better direction. They've helped build the black movement. They've helped build the Chicano movement. You know, I was talking last week that Martin Luther King's main advisor was a Jewish communist named Stanley Levinson, who was mainly an advisor. He wasn't telling King what to do. He was just a very experienced strategist who King loved talking to, because you need, if you're the lead organizer, it's lonely and you always self-doubt and you have six, not just two paths to go, six paths to facing you. And you're trying to figure out what to do. You'd like somebody to talk to. Manuel and I talk all the time like that. Barbara Channing, you know, I say, what do you think I should do? You know, it's not like I know what to do, or vice versa. So he really needed that relationship with Stanley Levinson, which is why John Kennedy made it essential that he could not have that relationship, and told him if he did, this is back in 1962, 1963, before Kennedy was killed, that he would call King openly as a communist. And at that time, King was afraid of that. He was new, and he had to back down. 3 or 4 years later, under Lyndon Johnson, he started calling Stanley Levinson, and of course they tapped his phone. And Johnson said, if you don't stop talking to Stanley Levinson, I'm going to tell everybody you're a communist. By this time, King said to Johnson, go to hell. You know, don't tell me who to call. So communists have also been very good advisors in the mass movement as well as leaders of the mass movement. I got Mitchell. Mitchell, can I get your voice on Voices from the Front Lines? Is it Michelle or Mitchell?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Michael.
Hi, Michael. I got it almost right. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah.
Eric Mann on Voices. What's on your mind?
I listen to you all the time. You know what? From the inside, I work for MTA. I'm just off on injury right now. Those people are collecting a lot of money with these measures to build rail And these rail projects and things like that are not helping the community. They're not hiring community people. They're helping their own people at the top with these construction companies, and all that money is recirculating through the board at MTA, and those people are getting kickbacks. I've worked for those people for 36 years. Believe me, I know from the inside how that program works. I'm a socialist. I believe there's enough in this country for everybody. And why on earth are these, did you know, the people that got voted in, look at what they're doing in this new administration. They're stuffing themselves when there's more than enough for everybody. And I believe we got to take it to the streets. I believe very strongly in what Malcolm X said. You know, it's the bullet or the ballot. And you know, people got to stop putting their head in the sand and thinking these white people are going to roll over and say, yeah, well, we'll share with you. They ain't going to share anything with anyone other than themselves, and not even themselves. Rich are rich. And if you ain't in that clique, you ain't nowhere.
Michael, very nicely said. And more importantly, just we, again, so care so much about our listeners. I mean, here's somebody who works at the MTA. You know, these rail projects are literally pork barrel, just what he said, kickbacks, other people getting contracts. You got to go and see it. We've been fighting for 5,000 zero-emission buses. We need your help. Send an email to Eric at Voices from the Frontlines. You can send an email to Manuel@thestrategycenter.org. We'd love to hear from you. Please come out tomorrow night. Michael, come out tomorrow night. I know you're on leave at 3542 Martin Luther King. Between King and, it's right at King and Crenshaw, a little, you know, right in the middle of the street. And you could learn about City of Inmates, Conquest Rebellion, and the Rise of Human Caging in Los Angeles by Kerry Lytle Hernandez. G, how many minutes do I got? Hey, G, how many minutes? I have to go. I'm done now, G tells me. Oh, my God, I'm sorry I asked. 818-985-5735. Thank you, everybody. We're playing Nina Simone, who's saying, I did it my way. Thank you for calling. I'm sorry we didn't get everybody because we had some trouble with the phones. I'll be gone next week. I'm on anniversary leave. I'll be back the week after that. All power to the people. Thank you, G. Thank you, Channing. Thank you, Manuel. See you tomorrow night at Strategy and Soul. Traveled each and every highway and more. Much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did.